Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, and welcome back to the Expert Slot. This is not the usual episode that comes out every Tuesday, but one of the bonus episodes in which I talk to an expert. So today I'm joined by nutritional therapist Eve Kalinic, who is the author of Be Good to Your Gut. I asked Eve on the show not to give nutritional advice per se, but to offer some practical tips on how best to better our relationship with the things we eat and how to feel more centered and comfortable around food. None of her tips cost anything, nor do they involve lengthy rituals that might be unsustainable, which is one of the reasons I like Eve's approach to nutrition so much. She's never judgmental or condescending, but rather sensible and compassionate. Two of the qualities I think are crucial when dealing with something as emotionally complex as what we put in our mouths. Here's Eve. So can you explain a little bit about nutritional therapy and what it is that you do?
Yes. So nutritional therapy is essentially using food and lifestyle, including potentially some supplementation, to essentially bring the body into homeostasis, which essentially means balance. Mm-hmm. Obviously there are different ways that nutritional therapies can work. In my practice, I do tend to use functional testing. Mm-hmm. So functional medicine being using things like stool analysis and blood mm-hmm. and saliva to analyze certain nutrients mm-hmm. or pinpoint any deficiencies or imbalances in the body.
It's extraordinary how much I've experienced how much what you eat affects how you feel and how your body works. And it's something that I think, until you've made a shift in your diet or done something about it, it kind of feels like, yeah, it's food is food. I mean, there was this whole thing 20 years ago where a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. Like, that's the end of... And now I think we're realising that that's not the case at all.
Yeah, I do think that. I also think that there's the way in which the relationship we have with the food that I think has a greater role to play than sometimes we give it credit for. And that sometimes we're fixing in on the sort of the data, as it were, the calories or the nutrients, nutrient value or whatever it is, but actually a lot of it's to do with the way that we're engaging with our food. And I think for myriad reasons that's been skewed over the last, say, 40 years in some regards.
Yeah. Before we started recording, we were talking a bit about superfoods, or, you know, like perceived superfoods, and how people will just go, yeah, you know, like, I can do whatever as long as I have, let's say, some spirulina at the end of the day, and how that just doesn't work. It has to be, you know, a kind of sustainable approach.
Yeah, I think people just, I guess it's that whole silver bullet that we mentioned. You know, people want to latch on to one sort of superfood when actually it just, or make something miraculous, you know, like, there's a friend of mine, she's got a quote, it's called May the Thoughts Be With You. It's a beautiful book about positive affirmations, and there's a one cartoon in there that's got a lady standing there with an apple, and it's saying, you know, I'm going to make an apple crumble out of this. Actually, I'm going to make a tart tatin. And then the other one says, why don't you just eat the apple? And I think sometimes we can get to the tart tatin whether in nutrition before just actually getting some of the basics.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't necessarily need to sort of latch on to fads or quick fixes, and they're very, very rarely sustainable.
So in this episode, we're going to talk about the relationship with food and how that can be adjusted for the better without spending any money on anything and not putting loads of, you know, not loads of time, money, but more kind of conscious decisions that would help your gut out and help your mind gut connection. And you were saying that there's a massive connection between the brain and the gut. Can you explain a bit about that?
So what was always thought of as a kind of, I guess, a top-down communication, like we would feel anxious and then we'd feel that stereotypical butterflies in the stomach, or, you know, that nervous feeling.
Yes, people would say you've got IBS because you're nervous.
Yeah, kind of.
That kind of connection.
But even if you don't have IBS, you know, those when you're due to give a big presentation, or I don't know, you're going into an exam you know, you get that feeling, the butterflies, that whole nervous, sticky feeling in your stomach. So it was always thought that that was like, you know, a top down. But then when you think about phrases like just that we use, like gut feeling, gut instinct, gut intuition, I mean, they're not there for you know, no reason. But again, like we always thought that that wasn't, there was no relationship from the gut necessarily to the brain. As the research is coming out now, the reality is that that's much more of a bi-directional relationship. So, and related to the microbiome specifically. So mm-hmm. in our, well, we've got a microbiome, different microbiomes all over our body, mm-hmm. but the biggest one is in our gut, and that yeah. refers to all of the microbes that reside in the gut. Mm-hmm. And so they
and what are microbes for anyone?
So bacteria, fungus, viruses, anything like that
yeah.
Is the microbiome essentially right. collectively. In the gut, it's mostly bacteria.
Okay.
And they all have sort of, I guess, different roles to play. We do understand from actually relatively small amounts of research, is that actually not that much known about the microbiome, which was kind of shocking, really, mm. when at one point they thought that microbes outnumbered our human cells 10 to 1.
Really?
They now think it's more of a one-to-one relationship. The microbiome now is being considered an organ in its own right because of yeah. all the processes that it manages. And one of these, crucially, is things like serotonin production. So mm-hmm. Serotonin, I think a lot of people have heard of, but if they haven't, it's essentially our happy neurotransmitter. So with things like anxiety and low mood, or more seriously depression, mm-hmm. You know, you might be given medications to help increase serotonin in the body. Now, what was considered, again, something that was more cognitive in its nature, or entirely cognitive in its nature, as in brain dependent, we know that actually 95% of serotonin production is in your gut. And it's your microbes that essentially switch on mm-hmm. these serotonin receptor sites in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that amount of serotonin that's produced in the gut, we have to think about the connections then with how that has a role to play with
yeah.
our mood. The other part of that is that you know, our gut bacteria also help to manage inflammation in the body. So they yeah. produce certain substances, one of which is, or they're called short chain fatty acids, mm-hmm. and one of which is called butyrate, and that's the sort of major one in terms of managing inflammation. Mm-hmm. And when we look at studies and cases related to depression, by the way, also depression and IBS are often codependent, they also yeah, coexist they work, yeah. sorry, in a lot of individuals. And it's a bit like chicken and egg. Did the IBS create the depression, or did depression create the IBS? We don't really know. Mm. But we do know that those people that suffer with depression may also have lower levels of butyrate and have gut symptoms. So then it's the question now, is depression, is it necessarily a cognitive disorder, or is it, and or actually, yeah, is yeah. it a disease of inflammation? And so that has to, you have to sort of look at the gut health. So
yeah.
there's a few ways in which gut bacteria influence the way that our mind works. And even more kind of, I guess, radical stuff now is thinking about, you know, how, whether or not microbes can directly communicate to the brain via the vagus nerve. So there's a lot of research coming out on this, yeah. like every single day. But it's I think it's fascinating.
It's completely fascinating.
Because what we thought was all in the mind may not be.
Yeah.
And that our gut bacteria have a role to play in that.
Okay, so let's go into your tips then.
Right.
So tip one.
So often I start with things like that are not actually even down to the food, like to what we're eating, but just how we're eating it. So sitting, as you sort of, as again, I think probably through your experience of changing your diet,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, sitting and taking time over our meals. Because that's a lot of the things that we do. We're eating it on the hop, either, you know, shovel it up, barely looked at it over mm-hmm. our computer screens at lunchtime, and then wondering why, A, we're hungry 5 minutes later and we're reaching for sugary snacks,
mm-hmm.
or we just feel really bloated and uncomfortable. So it can just be even alleviating those sort of symptoms, and also better engaging yourself with your food. Because, mm-hmm. again, like all of this stuff, we've got to really think about how we engage, like our relationship with our food, more than just the food itself. So sitting, chewing properly, Taking a bit of time over your meals. It don't, you don't have to be there for hours, but just, and switching off the devices, you know, like the emails and the, you know, because sometimes, you know, clients can be having, I hear them doing this, that they will have be writing an email, checking the phone, TV's on at the same time. I think what we've got to really analyse, if somebody can't sit and eat a meal without distraction for 15 minutes, they've got a bigger problem, as in they're addicted to distraction.
Yes, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So rather than that being the problem and trying to deal with that, because actually just to sit and enjoy your meal, you know, maybe you might just have, a nice picture in your flat or whatever, or the house that you want to look at. Or if, you know, obviously better still, if you're with company that you're chatting and engaging, that you know you don't necessarily there shouldn't, that the boredom factor shouldn't be there. And actually I think we need to understand that we need to do nothing sometimes, like nothing, just like sit down.
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact: you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What's your second tip then?
So second tip is some is the way that, so often again, being in a busy city, I guess, or not even actually, you don't need to be in London for this. Mm. Everybody's busy. Mm. I hate that word. Anyway, it's the whole thing of like, you don't necessarily have time to make, you know, like any sort of a meal.
Yeah.
Or you might just have the inclination that you can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Right, so where I'd say is then, if that's the case, if you're getting something, either you're picking something up or you're at home and, you know, beans on toast is, I love beans on toast as a go-to, or eggs on toast, just put it on a nice plate.
Yeah.
Because the visual of doing that is going to help you, again, it's about bettering that relationship with our food.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself helps to alleviate anxiety.
Yeah.
And what happens physically is that you're, you know, when you're in that sort of rest and digest, you put the body into the parasympathetic mode, that you're going to obviously or potentially take a bit more time over your meal, but you're going to then give your body more of it, or your gut more of a chance to help, you know, better absorb the nutrients, breaking down the food just by the act of slowing down. You can never be in the same stages at the same time. So while all the time you're running and you're in that, you're compromising your gut health.
Ah, okay. So, and it's true that they're the two. So your gut can do one or the other.
Yeah.
It's either like all systems go.
Your nervous system is either in parasympathetic.
Yeah.
That then has a knock-on effect to your gut, because you've got an entire enteric nervous system that surrounds your gut. That's why they call it the second brain.
Right.
Because it's the only organ that can function independently of the brain.
But does that trigger better digestion, or?
Well, it's, again, it's helping the body to better absorb, because if you're in the fight and flight, then you're in survival mode. Your body's not thinking, okay, I need to up gastric secretions, I need to, because it's one, it needs to survive,
right?
So it's kicking in things like cortisol
and
all of those adrenaline type hormones.
So your body's basically taking what it needs in that moment, but not thinking about, oh, let's restore this lovely
gut lining or whatever. It's just compromising the way that your gut is functioning generally, and the nervous system when you're in that fight and flight.
Okay, yeah. Number three.
So number three is not stressing over your food, which I know sounds a bit of a bigger statement, and I appreciate it's not always easy for people, but not being so, I mean, you can get yourself in such a tizz with food that you'd end up eating nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know when I started studying nutrition that, I mean, I'd sit in lectures and think, well, you actually can't eat or drink anything because potentially everything's got an issue, in inverted commas. So I think the less you can stress around your food, the more likely you are to make just generally healthier decisions, with a few maybe ones that may not be deemed healthy, in inverted commas. So being as inclusive in the diet as possible, try not to just, you know, read an article, two articles, and start cutting out massive food groups, and you know, try and be a bit, you know, critical in what you're reading and apply it to yourself. Because I have to say, I do see a lot of people, or talk to a lot of people, that for whatever reason, and they can't even tell me really why, that they cut out gluten, dairy, grains, soy. The anxiety then, particularly when, you know, people going out for food with their friends and they're sitting there just really anxious and so what if I go out with my friend? I mean, it actually becomes almost socially debilitating, and then you've got to think about how is that going to affect your mental well-being. And if your mental well-being's compromised, like you're consciously and consistently sort of in this anxious state, then, as we just discussed now, that's going to negatively affect your gut health as well. So then people are blaming the foods, when actually it's the stress around the foods that may actually be more of an issue than the food itself.
I know someone who mad about food, and literally cut out all fat in the 90s because fat supposedly made you fat, switched to sugar, now has done the same with sugar, but now will Google menus and look at like things as if she were a nutritionist, but like a pseudo nutritionist, and struggles to go anywhere, and if all the joy has left,
wasn't it?
Yeah, and it just feels like, you know, and sometimes, again, like as a beauty and wellness journalist, sometimes I'll go out and I'll be eating and people will be like, oh, you're eating brownies and things like that. And I'm like, oh yeah, like, of course. Like, because you have to live.
But you're not eating
like,
them every day.
No, not every day. And it's,
I mean,
not,
this is the thing.
Your
know,
home,
It's a bit like, I think this is where we go from this pendulum existence, and that's why it's not sustainable.
No.
Like, it's this almost like purge and splurge.
Yeah.
Like, you'll go on some really extreme diet, and then eventually, you know, you'll go, oh, my body's craving cake or sugar. It's like, no, your body is not craving that. Your mind is, because you've now restricted yourself for such a long time that you want to indulge or give yourself a reward in a way. And the most, I mean, even, it's one of the most, I guess, instinctive human being things is food is, you know, comfort, right?
Yeah.
So it's just not about being extreme with it. I'm not saying, like, go and eat. And for some people, it's legitimate. They've got allergies and stuff. So when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about, but that's actually quite a small percentage, relatively.
Yeah.
The people that are going on about, they've got these allergies or whatever else that are self-diagnosed, a lot of the time isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah. What's your fourth tip?
Fourth tip is managing your stress. Which means switching your phones off.
there's a theme here.
Having a digital curfew.
Okay.
Actually, that's the one thing I think has been good on the I don't know. I don't know what I do. I'm useless with technology anyway. But there's this thing that's come up, an app or something, or an alert that tells you how much less screen time you've been doing. So I think that's actually a positive thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We try to get verification through social media and devices, and it's not healthy, really. And you know, I think if we could see all the Wi-Fi, we'd be sort of like battling our way through it in a way.
I always think of it as, you know, that film Entrapment where Catherine Zeta-Jones has to go through.
No, it's true. I think it's definitely 100%. So I don't know. So yeah, I mean, sometimes it sounds a bit, well, it's not really woo-woo, to be honest with you, but because meditation and meditative practices have been around for centuries, but more so now than ever do we need to at least have some level of those in our day-to-day routine. And for people, that's going to be very different. I know, for one, I'm not somebody, I've tried it, I just can't sit and meditate.
Right.
The notion of going on something like a Vipassana, where you go and don't speak for like a week or something, and you just, I mean, I just can't.
I can't think of a helmet.
That would actually send me a bit.
Yeah, like, me too. I'd be mad. Yeah.
But the whole thing about having something in your day-to-day routine, and it can start with meal times.
Yeah.
You can use those as pockets of recovery. So if you're approaching your meal times as your meditative practice, maybe you wouldn't be quite so bored. in a way.
Stressed as well.
And stressed, yeah, because it's a cumulative thing, stress. You know, obviously, unless you're going, the events happen and stuff. But generally speaking, what we deal with, what I see and I'm talking about now in terms of, is chronic stress.
Right.
Right? Because the body's designed for acute periods of stress. It's actually healthy, but not the chronic stress that we go through every day.
Yeah.
So doing things that are going to help to manage. So it could be breathing. Mm-hmm. It could be yoga, the right types of yoga. Because, again, you know, when you're doing, going to fancy classes and everybody's looking at each other on the mat and then you're doing this, and that's not de-stressing.
But also there are different, the kinds of yoga, because some people, I mean, I know, again, this is my anecdotal experience, but I used to, I love yoga, I love Hatha yoga, but I used to sometimes go to quite intense classes like Ashtanga, which don't agree with me at all. And they don't give me any of the, for some people they're fantastic, but for me they don't give me any of the positive effects of yoga, because I'm so stressed during the classes for so long that afterwards I feel exhausted, I feel a bit weird. So,
well, yoga is not an aerobic practice. No. I mean, I genuinely think it has, at points in my life, really pulled me out of some pretty dark moments.
Yeah.
It's a breathing practice.
Yeah.
You know, my teacher's hilarious, actually. I've been going to her for about 15 years, but she just like, this is not an exercise class. There's a lot of huffing and puffing going on. And actually, it's not. It's about focusing. It's not about getting yourself in pretzel positions.
Yeah.
I mean, you may never get to that final pose. It's the journey. I mean, that's what Buddha said anyway. Yeah. It's not about getting to the top of the mountain. It's about the journey. But a lot of us are so focused on that end point that we forget all of this stuff. But I think yoga is all about that, being present and, you know, using breath to help. Because, again, what happens on a physical level is it's soothing the vagus nerve, right? And the vagus nerve is the wandering nerve that goes from the brain to the gut.
Yeah.
So, again, we're talking about when it comes to gut health, why breathing properly helps your gut health as well.
That's fascinating.
So, you know, even from a physical level, but those sort of things, I think, regularly, and again, it doesn't need to be yoga, it could be walking is really meditative, you know?
Yeah.
Washing up. There's a Buddhist monk called Thich Nhat Hanh. He's got this How to Eat. It's a wonderful little book with little daily, tiny sort of little meditation mantras. And he says washing up can be meditative if you want it to be.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be indulging in all this. You just got to find something that helps your mind wander, where you're not busy in your head.
What's your final tip?
So my final tip is avoiding unnecessary medications. Yes. And I know that sounds a bit of a bold statement, and I'm certainly not a woo-woo therapist here, and great minds work very hard for medications, but it's the stuff like popping Nurofen when you could have, because you've got a bit of a headache and you could have drunk a bit more water, necking back Gaviscon when you could have just chewed your food a bit more, antibiotics that are unnecessary, demanding them from your GP when you've got a cold and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that are going to negatively impact your microbiome and have then a knock-on negative effect to your gut health generally. And then, you know, again, looking further beyond that and what the gut influence is, you know, it could potentially be then your immune system, or it could be inflammation that can present itself, skin symptoms or autoimmune type symptoms or mood. But I'm all about trying to avoid those types of medications and try and get to root causes where you can. But that's the naturopathic philosophy anyway. It's treat the individual and treat the cause and not the disease. So I mean, that's fundamentally what I believe in anyway.
Fascinating. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.